Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies, we'll reach in there, we'll pull the baby out, clip the cord, but not in a creepy way.
Oh no. That's creepy just hearing it.
Awkward.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight, after a little housekeeping, we're going to talk about the 1997 movie Wag the Dog, starring Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, and Woody Harrelson, among others. But first, you caught our episode about The Apartment.
I did.
And had you seen The Apartment before?
I had not.
And what did you think?
So, first of all, I didn't realize it was Shirley MacLaine. I mean, she looked really familiar, but I resisted the temptation of looking it up. Just because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to kind of be surprised. I kept expecting it to take a very dark turn into some kind of like Hitchcockian murder mystery, where he ends up, with the girl dead and then he gets blamed for it and has to try and prove it really wasn't him. That's where I thought the movie was heading in the beginning, because there was all this setup about how, you know, everybody outside of the four or five guys thought it was, you know, the landlord and the next door neighbors all thought it was him who were doing all the carousing. So it could have very been easily turned out that, you know, he murdered this girl in his apartment. So I was kind of expecting some kind of Hitchcockian bent, and instead it had this slightly comedic, but also kind of black comedy, dark, broken kind of bent to it. It's a good movie, certainly, and it was nice to see. It's always nice to see a good movie like that in black and white. So I, you know, it was certainly well worth the time. I do think, though, that you were supposed to believe that he did actually make a suicide attempt.
I was going to ask you about that.
I think at the end of the movie, I think the suggestion is that if she hadn't come by, he was cleaning out his apartment, basically in preparation to kill himself.
You think? I don't know. I thought he was just going to move.
Why would you? I mean, is he going to pack up and move all of a sudden on New Year's Eve?
Well, I don't know. Hey, hang on just a second. So, yeah, I wasn't sure. I was pretty convinced he was going to be moving out of town and not killing himself.
No, I mean, I don't know. Maybe. The story, I think, could have easily gone either way. You know, it was certainly interesting to see the portrayal by...
Fred McMurray?
Yeah, Fred McMurray. It was kind of interesting to see him being a villain, because, you know, I don't think I recall a role where he was really a villain.
Well, he plays more... I mean, if you've seen Double Indemnity, he plays a noir-type character. But yeah, he was outright evil in this.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I'll have to put that on the list of things to watch. But no, I mean, it was a good movie. I was surprised, but you're right. I agree with you and Drew. It certainly seemed that her character was certainly much more progressive and forward than I think most women of that day and age were, because she was, you know, very proactive and realistic about what her affair was, and that, you know, she wasn't, even though she wanted to believe that he was going to leave his wife, she knew deep down that he wasn't going to, without some huge impetus to influence. And so, she kind of came to that realization on her own and moved on, although she moved on, you know, via a suicide attempt, which is, you know, not, of course, the best way, but, you know.
I wasn't ready for her real suicide attempt, and I also wasn't ready for the doctor smacking the crap out of her.
Yeah, I found that to be pretty odd, but conventional wisdom of the 50s and 60s, you know, medicine has changed a lot. In bedside manner, certainly, especially how we treat women now versus how women were treated, you know, back then. And, you know, men too, because, you know, men didn't go to the doctor because, you know, just nut up and, you know, be a man and all these things.
Well, and he wasn't treating her physically any worse than the rest of the people treated her emotionally.
Well, I suppose, but I don't know that that's very comforting. But certainly, I would be interested to ask Shirley MacLaine if he really did slap her around some, because it certainly did look like it.
Oh, it definitely did. Yeah, I wish I had a copy with commentary on it. This was a Netflix watch, so you don't get any of the commentary, obviously.
Yeah, that's how I watched it as well. So, but now, if you haven't seen it, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's it's just very interesting, and it falls along with having Larry Tate in every 10th movie or so.
Yeah.
Since we started off with Larry Tate,
this is kind of an odd. You know, it's odd to see actors that you've seen in other things and not really know much of their past, which is, of course, how Drew came to watch the movie, is that, you know, I knew when he said, you know, my first introduction to Jack Lemmon was Grumpy Old Man. I was actually talking in the car to myself. I'm like, he's going to say Grumpy Old Man. So that was amusing.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, that was, you know, right in his wheelhouse of movie watching. Any other housekeeping before we go on to today's feature presentation?
Go.
Tonight's feature presentation is the... Who directed this movie? I didn't write down who directed it. That's funny.
I don't actually know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's not in my notes. It wasn't apparently Oh, was it Robert Altman? No.
Well, let me look here. This is the power of the internet.
Okay, yeah. Luckily, there's a device that could tell us these things.
Yes, there's technology in most people's pockets nowadays.
Oh, I just thought you were happy to see me.
Barry Levinson.
Oh, Barry Levinson.
Oh, I knew that because I watched the special features. I'm dumb.
No, that's fine. I should have written it down because he's a mainstream guy.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff, certainly.
Yeah, so he's quality. And this is a quality movie. I liked it. I watched it twice this week. And I mean, I saw it at the time, or at least when it came out on video, but I also watched it twice this week for the podcast.
Yeah. And
this is a great movie. I really enjoyed it.
There's a lot in this movie.
Oh yeah. This will be fun to unpack a little bit.
So before we go into it though, a couple of things that I want to just say that Barry Levinson going into this said the movie isn't about the president as much as it is about the presidency, which is why the movie never had a defined president. And you never see a president.
Yeah. You see the back of his head only.
Right. And he said the movie was also completed before the Clinton Lewinsky affair had broken, even though it kind of came, the movie came out after slightly, but the movie was in the can long before the affair. So there were some parallels. He said, you know, some people accused us of trying to make this a Clinton story, but we, you know, this was written and done long before that.
Oh yeah. And I guess there's a note where Levinson and Dustin Hoffman were actually at the White House and met the president, and he asked him what their little movie was about, and they had to kind of tap dance.
Yeah, I believe it. And then apparently William H. Macy is really, really good friends with or hangs out with Mamet, David Mamet, a lot. And he said something interesting on the extra features that Mamet writes children's poetry.
In addition to what he writes on, like, Hurley Burley and those kind of things?
Apparently. But I was like, what? He writes kids' poetry?
Well, David Mamet is an interesting guy because he writes these really distinctive plays and scripts. And then he also did a Dennis Miller, where he's a hardcore right-wing guy now.
That's too bad.
Well, it's just, you know, things come up and you take a side and things make sense to you, so whatever. And again, as any artist, right? I mean, he can go down a rabbit hole.
I suppose. Yeah, I mean, his prerogative.
But you can definitely see, like in the William H. Macy speech, or actually, no, it's the De Niro speech to William H. Macy. That's a Mamet speech right there.
Yeah, no, it was definitely. A lot of this dialogue was very Mamet. I mean, it's very fast delivery, but you can't blink a lot in this movie. You can't not pay attention to this movie or you will miss things.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's fun, but I mean, you can actually watch it casually and still have a fun time, because there are really broad strokes of comedy.
Yeah, but if you watch it and pay really close attention, there's so much subtlety in this movie in some ways.
This is just a great movie. So if you haven't watched Wag the Dog, I'm glad you downloaded this episode of the podcast. Now go find yourself a copy of Wag the Dog and watch it, and then come on back.
Absolutely.
Because we've got stuff to talk about. Shall we dive into the plot? Or how did you, is there any history for you, personal history behind this movie?
I saw it in the movie theaters with a couple girls I work with at the time. I was kind of the token gay, so they had their older women, they're probably mom's age. And so they kind of adopted me because I was pretty young when I was at Fred's in the office, and they kind of adopted me. And so they wanted, you know, we would go out to dinner together on Friday night, and then we would go see a movie. And so this is one where we kind of hung out.
Fun.
So we were, you know, we went out to dinner, and then we went to a movie. And, you know, this is, because this isn't necessarily a movie I would have gone and seen. You know, I don't go to movies by myself, so, or I generally don't, but, I wouldn't have gone and seen this in the theater otherwise. I would have definitely rented it had I seen it, so.
Yeah, well, and, you know, new in a big city and you don't have any friends, and yeah, you're not going to really go to the movies by yourself unless you're going to be doing that anyway.
Right.
I mean, I've seen, I think, exactly one movie by myself, and literally it was by myself. There was no one else in the whole theater.
What movie was that?
It was The Skulls.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a choice. I was getting my tires changed. It was going to take 3 hours, so I walked over from the tire shop to the, because it's the winter time in Alaska, and if you changed your snow tires on, if you don't get there super early before there's snow on the ground, you're going to be waiting for quite a while. So I walked over to the Diamond Center and watched. I had a choice of The Skulls or like U-251 or whatever that submarine movie was. And I thought,
U-571.
Yeah. And I thought, hey, there's probably going to be chicks in The Skulls movie. You know, in a submarine movie, you know, there's just it's a big sausage fest. So I don't care about that.
There was a bunch of Bon Jovi.
Yeah. Well, it turns out The Skulls didn't have any chicks in it either of note.
Yeah. Well, and U-571's a good movie.
Yeah. Well, The Skulls is not.
All right. Well, yeah. Lesson learned.
Yeah. So
I don't think I've ever seen a movie by myself ever.
Yeah. It's not so bad. I mean, it's kind of like living by yourself. You can live by yourself and feel supremely lonely, or you can live by yourself and dig it. It just depends on your personality and kind of where you are in your life.
Yeah. But working in a movie theater, I can't imagine. I mean, I guess I watched movies by myself when I was making sure that they didn't get spliced improperly, because it happened once or twice. Because some movies you just can't tell. Like the Akira Kurosawa films, splicing them together, sometimes you can't tell where they go together. So we had a whole reel that got put on incorrectly. I did not do it, but the person who screened it before the public at the theater missed it. I think he probably fell asleep, because probably not his kind of movie either. But, you know, I recently, my friend Lori and I reconnected after a couple of years of not hanging out for various reasons. And so she and I went to a movie a couple of weeks ago, and she and I were the only ones in the theater.
Well, that's kind of fun. I like going to movies where your group is the only people in the theater.
It told us exactly what kind of movie it was. It told me exactly what kind of movie it was, and I know going into it what kind of movie it was, and I dragged my feet. I was hoping that we took long enough at dinner that we wouldn't hit the movie, but I couldn't stall long enough.
Oh, that's funny. Actually, I just heard, I think it was Who Charted, where Howard Kramer discusses doing that, using that very technique. Stalling your way out of a movie.
Oh, awesome. Well, I'm glad to know that I'm in good company. Because I ended up, it wasn't a terrible movie, but, it was a terrible movie. I'm trying to think, because it was that 100-foot journey with Helen Mirren.
Oh, and you didn't like it?
I didn't hate it. It just wasn't a good movie. It wasn't a terrible movie, but it wasn't a good movie. So it was so formulaic and.
Well, I know almost nothing about it, but can I give you my first impression based only on the ad?
Sure.
Okay, here's how I would pitch it based on the ad.
Okay.
It's like Life of Pi, except for instead of a tiger, you have shallots. Can we run with this?
Well, I haven't seen Life of Pi, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, like I said, it wasn't terrible. You know, I regret that I paid an evening price for a movie that up against my better judgment, I wouldn't have gone to, but I let her pick. So that won't happen again. And let her pick dinner too, which wasn't very good. So that won't happen again either. So I guess I just got to take the reins some more, but.
If you're listening,
but I digress.
If she's also a listener to the podcast, we're apologizing now.
Oh no, Lori would understand. She would get it. She would say, oh no, because she walked out of it. Because she's, what do you think of it? And I was like, meh. And she was like, yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah. So if she's listening now and is offended now that we've called her out by name, she'll even be more offended.
Nah.
No. I think Lori will be fine. Lori, we love you. If you want to ever come on the show, just get with Jason. We'll figure it out.
Oh, absolutely. We can have a big gay party at my house.
There you go. You can all have headsets on. Okay, so shall we dive into the plot of Wag the Dog?
Yeah.
Because the plot itself is not all that sophisticated. It's just that what happens is pretty funny. The plot is, the President of the United States is caught making advances on an underage Firefly girl less than 2 weeks before Election Day. He calls in a spin doctor named Conrad Breen, played by Robert De Niro, and they have to spin the news to take the public's attention away from the scandal. So, in order to do this, he constructs a fake war with Albania, hoping the media will obviously focus on the war and not the scandal.
Which is kind of hilarious that he just picks Albania.
Albania.
Yeah.
Why?
Why not? What do you know about them?
Nothing.
Precisely. They seem shifty. They seem standoffish. I mean, who knows from Albania? What do you know about Albanians? Who trusts Albanians?
Yeah, but what did Albania ever do to us?
What did they ever do for us? This is why we have to mobilize the B-3 bomber.
You really want to go to war with Albania?
We don't have a choice. This is what you do. Get your press office right now to deny it.
Okay, it didn't happen.
To deny. There is no report of Albanian activity. I have to deny it.
It didn't happen.
And then, to make this all happen, he contacts Hollywood producer Stanley Motz, played by Dustin Hoffman, who, depending on...
He plays a great performance.
Oh, this is... actually, both De Niro and Hoffman do a great job in this movie. But yeah, Hoffman's character is awesome. And depending on who you ask, it's either based 100% on Robert Evans. Robert Evans, the kid stays in the picture, Robert Evans. If you haven't seen the documentary or read the book, I recommend them both. Robert Evans is probably the iconic Hollywood producer.
Yeah, you recommended it to me before, and my friend Robert, who's visiting, also was on. He said the same thing. He's like, you have to go, you have to go watch, the kids' day. So between you two.
No, but all you have to do is imagine Dustin Hoffman reading his own memoir as Stanley Motz.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Because that's the, all those little stories he said, every time they run into an obstacle in this movie, Dustin Hoffman's character says, oh, this is nothing.
You think you're in a tight spot now. All right, Conrad, try making the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Tell him, King.
Three of the horsemen died.
Hear what he's saying? Three of the horsemen died 2 weeks before the end of principal photography. This is nothing. This is nothing. This is just act one. The war. Now.
Yeah, so that's kind of what Robert Evans' book is all about, too, as far as... And he tells you right up front. So either he's based 100% on Robert Evans. In fact, Robert Evans actually is quoted as saying he did a fantastic job in that movie. He himself. Or he's based on Dustin Hoffman's dad. Or both, depending on, again, who you ask.
Well, good to know.
But he brings along his group of specialists in order to make this thing happen.
And boy, oh boy, Dustin Hoffman's fake laugh is grating and annoying. I know it's supposed to be, but his assistant, I just fell in love with her because she doesn't take any crap from him.
His assistant, Grace, is that who she is?
Yes. Yep.
Susie Plaxton. Also, the presidential spokesperson, John Michael Higgins. Freaking national treasure, John Michael Higgins.
Yeah, Best in Show.
Yeah, exactly. He first came in on my radar as Best in Show, and then all of those Christopher Guest movies, but he's been in a ton of stuff. And then, of course, Anne Heche as one of the, I guess, a presidential aide.
Yeah, it's like a senior staffer.
Yeah. And then you have Dennis Leary. Dennis Leary plays the fad king. He's the merchandising expert. And his character is awesome. And I think I love him in this movie because he is understated.
Yeah, he's not utilized as the humor and comic relief. He's actually utilized as a character.
Yeah, and he does a good job. You know, he has some good lines, he delivers them well, but he doesn't go over the top. He's not in Dennis Leary character. He's actually playing the fad king. By the way, his coat and sunglasses, I think, should have their own billing.
Yeah, you're probably right.
His coat is just great with all the buttons. I don't know why it struck me as just awesome, but it summed him up right there. You saw his coat, you saw his sunglasses, you knew what he was all about.
Exactly.
So there's costuming. That's why they win awards for costuming.
You imagine that there's bumper stickers all over his car.
I don't know. You imagine maybe he drives a matte painted Maybach, though.
Oh, that could be.
Like, I go the other way with it. And then you have Andrea Martin, who plays Liz Butsky, who is also one of Stanley's people. And what they do is they concoct a war with Albania. And so what do you need for a war? You need to be able to see it on TV. It's like, well, there's no war. Well, there is a war. I'm seeing it on TV. That's what Robert De Niro keeps saying. So they basically, at random, they pick Albania, because nobody knows anything about Albania, except that maybe Jim Belushi is Albanian.
Apparently.
Yeah, which is hilarious. And obviously this is before the Kardashians.
Thank God.
Because now it's very popular to be Albanian. But anywho. So, actually, by the way, the best part of the Emmys, as far as the part that I saw, was when Jimmy Fallon mentioned all these people up for all these awards and says, and none of you is going to make as much money in your whole lifetime as Kim Kardashian has made with her iPhone app.
Oh, sad.
Sad, but true. Anyway, so they have to have this war narrative. And what do you need for a good narrative? You also need a theme song. So you hire Willie Nelson.
Right.
How do you feel about Willie Nelson generally?
I think Willie Nelson's character, he does a pretty good job. I mean, he seems like the singer-songwriter who's constant. I get the impression that this is not much of a stretch for Willie Nelson, because he seemed kind of strung out in stone most of the time and or intoxicated and trying to make music.
But you're not turned off by Willie Nelson, right?
No.
Because
no.
I know some people are, and I'm not. I think it was great. I thought he was great. He did a great job.
No, I have a fondness of Willie Nelson because of, you know, Our Grandmother.
So. Yeah, well, and he also wrote a ton of songs.
Well, absolutely.
That are infinitely singable.
No, I think that this was a good role for him because he was believable.
Oh, yeah, completely. So they end up putting together this fake footage where they get a girl to be an Albanian refugee running from her war-torn village, played by Kirsten Dunst, which is pretty great. Although in one, when they were doing the slow-mos and when they were taking the Doritos chips and replacing them with the cat.
Tostitos.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tostitos. When they took the Tostitos out and put the cat in, the freeze frame they did on her face looked a lot like Sarah Chalk. So I thought that was interesting.
No, I thought that whole CGI-esque kind of technology theme was hilarious.
And the running commentary of telling everybody, oh no, you can't ever talk about all this. This does not go on your resume. Right. You know, that was important to bring home every time. And because he does it in such a interesting way. I thought it was an interesting choice to make Robert De Niro kind of scraggly bearded. I mean, he was not entirely neatly groomed, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he was kind of counterculture, but, you know, in that way he kind of slips under the radar because people don't necessarily pay attention because they think he's just some greasy loser dude.
Yeah, I guess that must have been it. Because he doesn't seem a well-polished, public relations expert.
Right. He's not who you would expect to be able to handle his way out of a situation.
Exactly.
Except he's handling everybody out of every situation.
Oh.
He probably has everybody pegged 5 or 6 moves out in every direction.
Well, he's definitely in close running with Dustin Hoffman. Because Stanley Motz, he will let nothing get in his way. No matter what obstacle comes up, it will not get in his way.
Yeah, no, that was apparent. I mean, it was one of the good lines in the movies when, you know, the other presidential candidate or senator guy played by Craig Nelson, you know, he can't end the war. He's not producing the war. I can end the war.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing is other candidate played by Craig D. Nelson, has these ads about how this war is contrived and. But I thought his character was really interesting because the first time you see him, he's doing an ad he's doing an interview where he's saying, either there's not a real war and the president needs to stop this charade now, or there is a real war and he kind of trails off because clearly he should not have even said that sentence, which is very Rick Perry-esque, I want to shut down 3 agencies in the government. Well, which are they? Well, there's 1 and 2 and I can't think of the 3rd. Oops. So they have Willie Nelson coming up with the song, the big theme, like We Are the World kind of song. And they gather.
This is hilarious.
Oh, it is so great. They gather in the studio and they're recording the song and it's fantastic. And
in the course of human events,
when a thread must be answered with courage and strength,
our forefathers earned the right to be free.
Now it's time to guard their dream.
Guard our American borders.
And then Craig T. Nelson comes up with, "The war is over," and that's where De Niro and Anne Heche, Anne Heche does a pretty good job because she's pretty neurotic and high strung and all over the place. Like when her highs are high, her lows are low. When they thought, "Oh, this war thing isn't going to work," Dustin Hoffman is like, "No, no, no, this will work. We will make this work.
This is only Act 1. We're going to go to Act 2."
And that's when they come up with Act 2 is not only do you need a war, you need a war hero. So what do you need to have a war hero? You need someone who is caught behind enemy lines and then rescued. So they have to come up with something, some tie-in, something. And they come up with the old shoe.
Yeah.
So they have Willie Nelson write this song about an old shoe.
Daddy had a hound dog. Used to call him Boo.
He could
follow me around, stay to me like glue.
And his favorite thing to play with used to be my good old shoe.
So you hit that 16th.
Well, I wish I had a woman who was half as good and true.
Hey, they keep me out.
Anybody here know Morse code?
What are you gonna do with Morse code?
Give me the facts. Sergeant William Schumann, U.S. Army, serial number 21312841262.
Good old shoes. Here's the deal. Here's the deal.
Good old shoe. Good old shoe. Whatever road you're walking, he will get you through.
He's in a sweater, and he's we drop him behind enemy lines, and he's trapped.
In the sweater.
In the sweater.
Good.
Is there a way we can make it sound old and scratchy, like a hiss?
You ready?
Yeah.
Good old
shoe.
Good old shoe.
With an old label, I see where you're going with this.
Oh, shoe.
Hey, good old shoe. Good old shoe.
Stand up straight and tall the way he taught you to.
I'll write a speech.
I'll help you with the speech.
The president reveals that William Schumann, was trapped behind enemy lines.
This is good.
Heartfelt.
Touching.
Touching. Oh, people will weep.
The soul of a good old shoe.
Did I put the name of the person? I probably didn't, darn it. But the guitarist, the old black guy, who sits down with Willie Nelson and they write that old shoe song.
And then they collaborate.
And then they slip it into the Library of Congress in the 1930s as an actual song of the time.
Which is brilliant.
And they concoct this whole thing about the old shoe and getting back. And then the whole thing with the Morse code on his sweater.
Uh-huh.
It's so funny. Courage, Mom. Dustin Hoffman's character actually goes and does a speech for the president who thinks it's too corny. And I thought it was very effective that they didn't actually have him giving the whole speech. They just have him giving the first couple lines. And then they cut to everybody walking out of the Oval Office crying. And so that was nice. It didn't give too much away, you know.
You know, but that's also very compelling. It's a good way to sway people, but, you know, very persuasive. How am I going to show you this is good? I'm going to give the speech to a room full of women, and they're all going to cry.
And then, of course, because they're coming up with this all on the fly, and everything seems to be working great, then they have to find some actual soldier by the name of Schumann or Schubert or something.
Well, I think they found Schumann. They found him first through, because Dennis Leary makes the phone, you know, he makes the phone call of special projects, and so they get the name, and that's how they create the song. Because Dustin Hoffman's going through iterations of Schumann to try and get, you know, good old shoe. But so they'd already had his name, but then they go and they're going to actually go and retrieve him from where he's at.
Which is the Fighting 303, which is a special unit that they have now concocted this whole backstory for, and their outfits are, they wear a half black, half leopard skin beret, and they have their fighting song and all this stuff. And then Schumann is delivered to them in the form of Woody Harrelson.
Which, that's when the wheels come off the wagon.
Woody Harrelson is so great. I mean, I don't know, when was Natural Born Killers? Because that's who Woody Harrelson is channeling, is Mickey from Natural Born Killers.
And that was 1994, because you and I saw that in the movie theater.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So this is just after that. So that works out perfectly.
Yeah.
Because it turns out he is criminally insane.
And he plays it so well.
And they first get inkling when he's delivered to them and he's in manacles. And then
yeah.
Anne Heche runs out into the rain to talk to the military guys who are just happy to leave this guy with them. Like, now he's in your hands, we're leaving. And we find out that he raped a nun. And that's not all, but that's enough.
Yeah, and they're happy to get rid of him.
Oh, the military is totally happy to get rid of him. So they have to take the small plane cross country to bring Schumann back, and they want him doped to the gills. But then there's a little mishap with the plane, spoiler, plane crashes. Nobody's hurt. The plane crashes.
Except I think the pilot ends up, because you never see the pilot or the co-pilot, I think they actually die.
Oh, well, that would be very sad. I didn't notice that part of it.
Because later on they talk about blaming it on pilot error.
Oh, that may be true. And they also have to have, they end up with like a migrant farm worker driving them into town.
Right, and you don't see the pilot and co-pilot.
Yeah, that may be it. But, of course, they stop off at some place where they can call for help. And they're still planning on doping up Woody Harrelson and bringing him back as the hero.
Right.
And to include somebody coming up, a little kid going up to him and wiping like some sort of meat smell or something on his cuff so that his old dog will come and recognize him. And anyway, they have this whole thing concocted. Well, unfortunately, while they're talking about how they're going to get to the event, old Shoe goes and tries to rapes the farmer's daughter, or maybe the wife. I can't remember.
I think it's his wife. But that's that scene you see coming, and you just it's a great scene because you want to stop it, and you know it's going to happen, and you're trapped.
Oh, and Woody Harrelson has the crazy eyes going too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he can have economy of movement because he is just so crazy in the eyes. So then, of course, in the it's an old silly joke, but it totally is funny when the farmer goes in and shoots Woody Harrelson off camera.
Oh, Shoe, you in there? Wait a minute. He's not dead. He's alive. Strike that.
Okay. Well, now on to the next plan. This is nothing. We can figure this out. What better than a military funeral for a fallen soldier?
Yeah, with the dog now that they have, you know, put meat juice on the casket as
exactly.
They're moving shipment up. And except that you see, you know, Robert De Niro kind of, you see the Connie character, you know, motioning to the dog as if the dog has been trained by him, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you're right, because you definitely get the point that this is all a Conrad Breen production along with Stanley Motz.
Right, it's all a put-up job.
Yeah. So, and now we're reaching the end of the story, because now the president gets reelected, everything's just fine, but as the military funeral thing is going in front of them, they're kind of behind the scenes watching it. There's a news program on one of these talking head news shows that talks about how, well, clearly it was the ad campaign that, by the way, you see ads from periodically through the movie where the tagline of the ad is, "Don't change horses in midstream." And Dustin Hoffman keeps saying, "This is rank amateur bullshit. Why would they even, who's getting paid for this? Why would they even do these stupid ads?" Well, at the end, the commentators are saying, "Oh, well, clearly it's because the voters didn't want to change horses midstream," which just sends Stanley off the deep end. He's like, no. I constructed this whole thing to get the president reelected. It's not those stupid ads. So now he wants the credit. And he's been told all along he cannot have the credit. That's the one thing he's been told.
It's actually kind of a sad and poignant part of the movie because you realize what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, this is the best thing that Stanley Motz has ever done. This is his greatest production.
Right. It's his denouement.
And Dustin Hoffman's whole character is this guy who gets things done seemingly magically. He's just got an instinct for this stuff. And he has 100 stories to tell you. So this is his best story ever. He's going to want to tell the story to everybody. But as Connie points out, no, you can't tell the story to anybody.
Right.
Well, what are they going to do to me? Well, they're going to come to your house and kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
And at the end of this movie, we learn that Stanley Motz has suffered a massive heart attack and died. So there we go. And it's not too subtle about that. Who caused that?
No.
And the
There's
other
no
thing,
doubt.
No. And the other thing is, which is a little bit a fun little twist, is there's a news report of another violent incident in Albania. So is this just a continuation of the fake war, or is this life imitating art? You know, you don't really know.
Well, I think that's the point.
So I thought that was pretty great. The one cameo that struck me as really funny was the animal wrangler, the cat wrangler who ended up bringing out lots of opsu or whatever, was Harlan Williams, who I thought was hilarious.
Oh, I didn't notice.
It made me smile when I saw him. I thought, huh, 6 minute abs.
Well,
but you didn't like that movie anyway, so. Any other thoughts off the top of your head about Wag the Dog?
No, I mean, it's still a great movie. It still holds up. I mean, it, part of it, it's a little bit, the technology is a little dated, but it still holds up as far as the story. Because, you know, it's hard to tell if life imitates art or, you know, or how, you know, just how on the mark this is. But very easily could I see this happening and, you know, unfold in real life.
Still today. Absolutely. Now more than ever in this day where you have, you know, one news source, one credible news source, basically just using another news source as their source, you know, another news outlet. Yeah. So when you can report that Fox News is reporting, that MSNBC is reported, you know, seems like it would
from
be
the Onion.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, exactly. It could be, I think, maybe even more easily done today.
Oh, yeah. No, it's easy. It's easy to make fake news on the internet and get it repeated on quote-unquote trustworthy news sites.
Oh, yeah, because you spin, all you have to do is spin up a couple of people, and all of a sudden it's a thing. And now once it's once it's a thing, it's not ever not going to be a thing.
Right. Once it's on the internet, it's on the internet forever.
Yep, and it's not even about whatever it started to be about.
Right.
So, now, what do you know about Edward Louis Bernays?
Nothing.
Okay. Me either until today. I was doing a little research because, okay, so I know who Dustin Hoffman's character is based on, but who is Robert De Niro's character based on? I'm not sure this is directly, although I think it has to be. He was born in 1891 and died in 1995, which is pretty great, by the way.
What was his name again?
His name is Edward Bernays. No relation to the sauce. But he is the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and he's described as the father of public relations.
It looks like Hitler.
Oh, you're looking at a picture of him?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yeah, let me tell you a little about what Bernays did. Bernays...
This can't be the same guy.
Well, hold on.
I must be... He died in 1995,
yeah. Okay. So, okay, right. Picture it. He works for the American Tobacco Company in the 1920s. So he sends a group of young models to march in the New York City parade for women's rights. You know, this is all the suffrage movement, right? So we have suffragettes out,
mm-hmm.
you know, marching for women's rights. And so what does he do? He sends a bunch of models out. Because there is a public taboo about women smoking. And so that's a huge market that the tobacco industry doesn't have because it's not, you know, it's taboo. So he sends these models out with Lucky Strike cigarettes and they smoke them in front of the cameras and they call it like the women's rights movements. They call their Lucky Strikes their torches of freedom.
Wow.
He helps introduce the whole, you know, that whole, what was the ad campaign? You've come a long way, baby.
Yeah,
that was even within our lifetime. So they got 60 years of mileage out of this one ad campaign.
Wow.
Let's see. He also introduced the world to the pancake breakfast for presidential candidates. Calvin Coolidge.
Which is classic today.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Still. He convinced the American public through Sigmund Freud, his uncle's ideas, that bacon and eggs were an all-American breakfast. I mean,
I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, he was the one that said, like the whole Ivory Soap being 99.9% pure. He's the one.
99.44.
Well, I'm sorry. He was the one that said it was medically superior, and he used as evidence that the soap floated better than the competitions. So if it floats, it must be better.
Huh.
Yeah. He also sold water fluoridation by getting the American Dental Association on board. He's responsible for that.
Well, fluoride's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. But he sold it. Also?
Except, you know, Oregon doesn't think so.
Well, a lot of people don't think so. But how about this? You know why Dixie cups are popular? Because he worked in the 30s to convince consumers that only disposable cups were sanitary.
Well, it's hard to argue with that logic.
Yeah. Anyway, it's amazing what this guy accomplished in, you know, I mean, he worked for the tobacco companies. He worked for the devil, basically. Although in the 20s, maybe it wasn't seen so much like that, since it was just a crop like any other.
I don't think in the 20s they knew that smoking killed people.
Well, yeah, or at least not as, maybe not. But still, I mean, imagine what, you don't have to imagine. You could see what this guy did. Whole entire industry of public relations is built on partly on this one guy. So you could see where Conrad Breen comes right off of Edward Bernays.
Yeah.
And it also reminds us that we're being manipulated all the time.
You know, that's the debate back and forth about advertising, and does it really sway people? Because they see, you know, images on TV don't sway people. That, you know, because, you know, violent video games don't have any effect on children. But then you have, you know, advertisers that pay millions of dollars to get a Super Bowl spot. You know, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that video games, you know, imagery doesn't influence people, and then pay millions of dollars to try and influence people through imagery. I, by the way, I don't happen to believe that video games make children more violent. So I'm just putting that out there.
Well, but look at something, you know, look at the internet. Because the internet, one of the cool things about the internet is that if you're like particularly interested in some really obscure subject, now with the internet, you can find dozens, if not thousands, of people that share your same strange interest, you know?
Right. It's afforded itself a certain camaraderie.
Well, yeah. And so, yeah, you're not alone. So it goes everything up to, you know, I'm different in my small town, and now I can connect with people all around the world and feel, you know, not feel quite as different, and therefore make my life more bearable, blah, 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 which is all, it's all good. I think everybody can say that's a good thing, to, you know, normalizing really bad behavior.
Yeah, no, now I can meet up with all my skinhead buddies online.
Exactly, yeah. Or it's, you know,
subversively without getting caught.
Yeah, it's the joke about, you know, you go to the, Pornhub or something, and you have all these categories where it's like, you know, the categories are like, you know, anal and fisting and bestiality and then extreme. And you're like, hold on. I mean,
I don't want to know.
All the rest of that was not in the extreme category, God forbid what is in the extreme category.
Yeah, that goes in the category, if you don't know, you definitely don't want to click.
Well, yeah. And again, I don't think the internet is all that bad either, except that you have to realize that, you know, if you want to justify your aberrant beliefs or opinions, all you have to do to get a bunch of people to agree with you is to search out on the internet. And you've got everything from, you know, nuns who are cloistered and still writing blog posts to skinheads.
Oh, yeah.
To, you know,
it's a dangerous place.
Yeah, yeah. It just makes the world smaller. But it also, you know, think about, you know, how Facebook is doing experiments on us. I mean, that's just part of your deal. You know, the fact that,
yeah,
that they'll just put up, you know, they'll rank whatever stories on your feed. Basically, if they want to, they can pull the strings of that all day long. You have no idea.
Yeah, that's true.
So trying to affect your mood. Also, you know, we're later tonight, Drew and I are going to talk about the movie Casablanca, which is a great movie, but it's also a war propaganda movie. not so directly as a lot of the others, but they do things on purpose. Like the Italian character is mocked, you know, because that's what you do. And, you know, the German characters are all bad, of course, because they're Nazis and it's easy. You know, I mean, now, you know, it's hello.
Nazis are always the easy villain.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's also World War II that is, by the way, still going on when the movie comes out. So it's not as if they're not the actual villains. But you know, all it would take, you know, if there was really a concerted effort to, promote U.S. involvement in military action overseas, just kind of keep promoting these certain news stories. But it's a double-edged sword. You know, the whole what's happening in Missouri, where we have tensions are high. You know, people don't like the police in America because the police are racist murderers, depending on who you ask.
Or yeah, I don't personally believe that, but
no, I don't believe that either. But also, you could see where if a disproportionate number of people of your race are being killed by the police, something's going on. Anyway, yeah, we're not going to talk about that necessarily.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, if all it takes, and this is, I mean, obviously, life shouldn't be as cheap as this, but one incident can ignite an entire state / nation / the world was watching what was going on in Missouri last week, the week before. You know, all it takes is one, you know, one match to light the fire. So is the match, obviously in that case, it's an organic thing, but what if it wasn't? You know, what if the match is entirely created out of whole cloth?
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that, again, that goes back to our debate of, you know, what's news and what's media and what's entertainment and what's crap. You know, it's hard to know. It's hard to know when you're hearing a story. You're not getting an independent story anymore, because pretty much anything you see has got a bent to it. There's not much objectivity in today's reportage.
Well, and was there ever, you know, could you ever get a completely, absolutely unbiased, disinterested, yeah, unbiased story? It would be difficult.
I don't think so.
I mean, as a human being, you know, you're on one side or the other.
Right.
And,
but I think, it, you know, there's a lot less commercialism in that, you know, that we've talked about this before. The, you know, the commercialization of the news industry has removed news from news.
Well, also, since I'm going to dive back into it. I don't care how many times you tell you we've talked about it before, we can move on. I'm going to dive back into one.
I want to make people aware that, you know, I'll beat a dead horse as long as I need to. I'm just saying.
Well, okay. How about this thing that I don't think we have talked about so much, at least, is that, okay, so we have infotainment, right? So we have the news that is brought to you by a sponsor. So there you have that thumb on the scale of the news, because you do
let me ask, how long before you think we start putting sponsors' names on tanks?
Oh, yeah. Why not? I mean, we already do, though. I mean, don't, you know, all of those things are bought and paid for by congressional, you know, like the, what is it, the F-15? No, it's not the F-15. Maybe it's, I don't know. It's one of the newer fighter planes that doesn't fly well in the rain. Yeah, the reason they still keep making planes built for dogfighting, even though we don't have plane-to-plane combat anymore, for the most part, is because, like, the parts of this plane are built in 45 states. So for jobs, you know, you're going to keep these things being built. But add to that, that we've got a scenario that all the news corporations these days use, but I think it's maybe from my perspective more glaring in Fox, but I know that all the other ones use them, so I'm not trying to be partisan here. But guess what? An opposing view on a news story is not being fair and balanced. Because just because you, like, the person who disagrees with the fluoride or whatever, because they disagree with your one expert does not make them an expert.
Right.
Not everybody should be given the same weight. You know, you don't have to present two sides of every story if there aren't two sides to it, you know?
Well, yeah, yes, I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, or you can't give everybody equal weight.
Exactly. But I also think that, you know, if you start, you know, telling Walmart, hey, you know, hey, Walmart, we, if you put your logo on one of our bombs when we go bomb the next, you know, the next country we're going to bomb, then, you know, hey, you know, you might get some more market share. I would find, I bet that a lot of the Midwest, rednecky Tea Party convention would, you know, they would be all over that.
You would win some, you would lose some. And the question for your, you know, your free market capitalist is, which is great. I'm not against capitalism, but the question is, can you win more? Because you can afford to lose some if you win more.
Although Walmart's now losing market share. So we'll see.
Well, and you have to remember that Walmart is not necessarily an American company. Walmart is a company of the world. Like Burger King. Absolutely. Like Burger King, maybe buying, what's the name of the restaurant chain in Canada? They're buying
Bob Evans?
No. No, Bob Evans is a producer. It's close, though. It's like Tommy somebody's or whatever. Anyway.
Tim Horton.
Tim Horton. Like there you go. Yeah. Yeah, so they're buying Tim Hortons, which is actually slightly larger corporation than they are, so that they can move out of America for, it'll be good for tax reasons.
By the way, Bob Evans are restaurants in the Midwest, just so you know.
Oh, okay.
So I wasn't confusing it with the producer. They actually are a restaurant chain.
Okay, I will take all of that out. I don't want to besmirch your name.
No, I'm just saying. I've eaten at Bob Evans, so they had gargantuanly large breakfast. I think I ate with Ohio, of all places.
Well, okay, back to Bob Evans for just a second. If you look at a picture of Bob Evans, what you will notice is that he has those like purple lenses in his glasses, which are the exact same that Dustin Hoffman wears in this movie. It's an odd thing. It's kind of like the same color that I think, who was the dad in Webster? He wore those too. And you're thinking, that's not altogether a masculine look, but it must be beneficial for some reason.
Are you talking about Alex Karras?
I am talking about Alex Karras.
This is the second Webster reference I've heard, because you referenced Webster because of The Apartment.
I did, yes, yes. Well, Webster was on, you know.
That's a terrible show.
It wasn't great. But, you know, it's, I remember some of it.
I remember some of it too.
I mean, it's, you know, it's it was in the cultural zeitgeist.
Yeah.
By the way, the cultural zeitgeist is all bullshit too.
Well, of course.
It's created. It's manufactured. It's Kim Kardashian. I mean, I think the Kardashians are brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Again, I don't want my daughter to become rich and famous because of a sex tape she put out. But if you're going to put out a sex tape, you might as well get rich and famous off it. So there you go.
I suppose.
But of course, live by the sword, die by the sword, right?
Yes.
That's what Stanley Motz found out.
That's very true.
So, and here's another one for that machine you have that knows everything about everything. Was Anne Heche dating Steve Martin during this period? Or was she dating Ellen DeGeneres during this period? I think it was pre-Ellen, and I think it was maybe in the middle of Steve.
Wasn't she also dating Harrison Ford, or am I imagining that?
I don't know. It's possible, but it seems like Harrison Ford would be going for a younger model even than her. But pre-Calista Flockhart, maybe Anne Heche was on his dance card.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know that she and Steve Martin dated, so.
Did you watch the movie Bowfinger?
I did. I thought Bowfinger was a great movie.
It's one of my favorite Steve Martin movies. But the best part of it is, spoiler alert, at the end, that the woman who keeps sleeping her way to the top becomes a lesbian. And that was a direct knife jab and twist at Anne Heche. Because he totally saw it as a career move that she did.
Huh.
Because, you know, now she's not a lesbian anymore. Now, that may just be sour grapes in Mr. Martin's life, but it's pretty
Steve
funny.
He's an interesting man.
But yeah, someday we'll have to do Bowfinger, because it's one of my favorite Steve Martin movies. It's also one of my favorite Eddie Murphy movies.
Yeah, it was a great movie. I mean, I don't know that it ranked in my top 10, but...
Oh, no, well, not of all movies of all time.
I know it doesn't rank in my top 20, but it was a good movie.
Yeah, I think so, too. So anything else about... about Wag the Dog?
Nope.
How about, okay, so you were unavailable next week, but the week after, what's on our list?
Yep.
Is it Dr. Strangelove?
I will have to consult the magic calendar one moment. So the 26th, so the 2nd, I'm unavailable the 9th, Dr. Strangelove.
Okay, that sounds perfect to me. I think we will want to shoehorn 9 to 5 in there someplace because I have lots of fond memories about that movie, and it's coming in the Netflix mail, so I'm going to revisit
it. Is it streaming? I wonder.
I don't know for sure.
I should own it, but I don't.
Oh, me too. I must have seen that movie 20 times, if more, not more.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
It was my introduction to Jane Fonda, I think. I mean, I knew the name Jane Fonda before. It was probably my introduction to Dolly Parton, too.
It was probably also your introduction. Well, no, I was going to say Lily Tomlin, but I think she was on Electric Company something like that.
She was on Laugh-In, and she did some, I think she was on Laugh-In, but she did that Ernestine character, and so I knew about that.
Yeah, and Dabney Coleman.
Yeah, Dabney Coleman, though, although I think he was in, I don't know, he was in the cultural zeitgeist, too.
Yeah,
but
he was around, but.
Oh my God. I have such fond memories. I hope that it's not a Nightbreed.
No. I've seen it. I've seen it in the last 5 years. It's still hilarious.
Oh, and by the way, you know, back to Wag the Dog for a second. You know, what really helps is in 9 to 5 and Wag the Dog is music. You know, that anthem that they wrote for it is really pretty great. It's exactly that kind of feel. You know, they're parodying, obviously, but it's that total feel of the We Are the World kind of anthem. And then the Old Shoe song, the Old Shoe song is great. It's just, you know, it's just a great, it totally sounds like kind of a 30s old folk song kind of thing.
Oh yeah. No, they got it. They hit it right on the head.
And then was it Merle Haggard or something plays, Courage Mom?
Oh, I don't know, but it was painfully hilarious.
Yeah. So yet another music thing. By the way, when we talk about Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yes.
We're going to have to drop in a bunch of music from there. Cause that was one of the fun things about that. Cause I've of course never seen the movie in the theater. I've only seen it on a small screen and never with people throwing things at the screen or dressing up. But,
you've never done an audience participation?
No.
Oh.
It's just not my thing. I mean, if I were just a tiny bit older, or probably, I don't know, if I ran with a different crowd, maybe. But I was a little bit too young for my group of friends to go like the Capri or whatever. And then it ended not long after I was old enough to appreciate it. Oh, I mean, I had plenty of opportunity.
Well, if you ever come to Portland, it happens every other weekend.
Yeah, well. It would probably be fun. Yeah, it definitely is an experience.
Oh, it's an experience. Oh, yeah. No, it's different.
Yeah, well, again, there's so many things about Portland that are slightly different.
This is true.
Like, everybody's, and again, it's not my scene either, but everybody says that, you know, that strip clubs are just basically sadness encapsulated, except in Portland where they're fun.
Well, I wouldn't know about that, but, you know, I have to confess that the clinic that I work at for the county shares a parking lot with a strip club.
Yeah, well, apparently it's a big industry in Portland.
The name of the strip club? The Pitiful Princess.
Oh, very nice.
But there's also Casa Diablo, which is a vegan strip club.
Of course. No, that's the other thing you hear about Portland strip clubs is, try the soup, which you don't hear at very many other strip clubs.
Like, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, well. And yet they still try to con all of us tourists on the voodoo donuts.
Oh, don't. I hate them.
Oh, come on. It could be worse. Your city didn't teach the world to buy expensive burnt coffee.
No, Voodoo Donuts is just overpriced. They're not all that good, and their customer service is just crap. So, I don't know. I'm not a fan of Voodoo Donuts, and Travis will back me up on this, but anyway, you know, it's a Portland thing. There's better donuts in Portland, but it's novelty and kitsch, and that's why people like it. So,
and as far as you're concerned, imagine, hey, come for the donuts, stay for the strip clubs, whatever.
I can honestly say I've never been to a strip club in my entire life.
I'm trying to think. I haven't either, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. No, I imagine it would be uncomfortable for me in a multitude of ways.
I'm trying to think. I can count the number of bars I've been to in America on one hand.
Oh, well, see, not me.
And, well, no, I mean, it's just a different thing. But,
yeah, I've been to.
In foreign countries, it's a little easier, but, you know, because you just do what you do in foreign countries.
Okay.
Well, you know, that's always been sort of my attitude. Is like, I'm not going to go to Ireland and not at least drink a Guinness or six.
All right. Well, that's a fair point. I would, yeah, good on you, mate. Yeah,
well, although I'm pretty sure I could say I didn't drink six in my entire time, like 2 weeks or whatever. I think I probably drank a couple Guinness and then whatever the battling brand was. Murphy's or something.
Guinness is just. Just the concept of it.
Oh, no. See, I kind of like the concept of it because to me, beer, you know, I think, what was it? Robert Fulghum was talking in one of his books about drinking urine and how people say, oh, drinking urine is just like drinking warm beer. I'm like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense because I don't like beer at all. But Guinness is not exactly, it's more of a syrup than a beer.
Ugh.
It's like a meal.
I don't want a milkshake. If I'm going to have a milkshake, I'm going to have a milkshake. I don't want it to taste like beer.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, if you're going to be, you know, eating some questionable lamb stew in a pub far away when you're trying not to speak out loud because, you know, and you're trying to also stay off the moors.
Yeah.
And on the road.
Yeah, the scary one-lane roads.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Over the cliffs.
So, yeah, my tiny little bit of world experience, So, and I'm sure if I was in, I don't know, well, when I was in Mexico, I don't think I had any, maybe one drink at a wedding or something, maybe. But no, I was more of a Coca-Cola out of the bottle guy.
Yeah, I would imagine. We're not drinking a lot of the water in Mexico.
No, or ice or anything.
Or ice, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I'm sure if I went to Canada, I'd drink a beer and eat poutine or something to be, you know, to have a full experience.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of poutine. So yeah, you got to get on that.
Yeah. Well, again, next time I go to Canada, we'll see.
Yeah.
Although
Kanaka stand awaits.
Well, you missed the Canadian adventures we had after Drew graduated, because you leapt off in Portland.
Yeah.
We had a really good meal and a really bad meal in Canada, in quick succession.
I've heard stories.
Yes. Although I think the bad Canadian meal was about on par with Rawlins, Wyoming.
Oh, gosh. That was the worst place I have ever eaten in my lifetime.
Oh, hey, speaking of which, so Rawlins, trying to be, I think, thoughtful, stepped in some Robin Williams shit.
Yeah. Yes, he did. But did you see his apology for it?
I did not.
His apology was great.
Well, good, good. From the statement that I read, he needed to make an apology.
Oh no, the apology was. I mean, it was. You need to find it. You need to seek it out and read it because it will restore your faith in Hank.
Oh, that's good. No, I think Hank's a good guy. I just think he just, you know, one of the things that you realize is that, you know, if you give somebody a microphone, eventually they're going to say something stupid.
Well, and I think the point of what he said was, look, I'm a suicidal guy often, and I just can't imagine killing myself. And I think I was just angry because he did it, and I don't have the courage to do it.
Well, except that he basically said that you're a loser and went all over about, well, you know.
And he so, but you need to read what he said, because it really was, he says, I don't, the basic crux of it is, I don't expect you to stop bashing me. I deserve it. So keep bashing me, but know that I'm apologizing.
Well, no, and that's good. And I expect nothing less than a genuine apology from Henry Rollins, because I have respect enough for him that I expect that out of him.
Yeah, no, it was great. I really do. Really, go seek it out, and it was great.
Yeah, or you know what? Also, I think, did we talk about this during our first episode that was never recorded about Jonah Hill's apology?
Maybe.
I think we must have. But
yeah, we probably did.
Yeah, about how when Jonah Hill used the F word.
Yes. Well, he used the word faggot, I think, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But his apology on, was it Letterman? Was it Jay Leno?
I think it was Conan.
Oh, it was Conan, yeah. His apology was great. It was a great apology.
It wasn't written by a publicist. It was, he did it. And I believe it was heartfelt, and I believe that he genuinely was upset. And I don't think he said the word with the intent that other people attached to it. And he said, in retrospect, he goes, I know the other people use that word, and I should have known better than to use that word. But I don't use that word in my vernacular as the derogatory meaning against somebody. So, you know, I apologize. You know, these are my friends. I've hurt my friends. I've let people down. You know, so I believe that it was absolutely heartfelt.
Oh yeah, no, me too. I thought it was again. You didn't see Conrad Breen or Stanley Motz behind his apology,
right?
Yeah.
So I give him, because I'm not wild about him. I mean, he's an okay guy, but you know, I have to respect his apology. Also, I have to say, I'm not offended by the F word.
Well,
like I don't give it the power that I, that's the one thing that I think people get, and you know, being a big Mo, I can speak from my perspective, but because I certainly don't want to say, you know, like the N word is, you know, doesn't have an impact over people, because I'm not black. I don't have the right to say that. But for me, you know, if somebody calls me a fag, I'm like, well, okay. Like I'm not going to give anybody that much power over me to influence me by a word. Cause you know what? I'm like, I think bad things about people all the time.
Oh yeah.
So,
well,
call me what you want. Just make sure you spell my name right.
Well, and plus you can call somebody a name and it doesn't really even matter what that word is, but it could feel either completely innocuous and bounce right off you, or it could just hurt you to your soul. And a lot of it is delivery.
I'm not giving anybody that power over me. I'm just not. I'm too much of a control freak.
Yeah. But, you know, I wonder because, not about your control freakiness, but I wonder, you know, because we're the middle-aged people now. So, you know, I don't think any of us could conceive of using the N-word just in everyday language, partly because we didn't grow up in, you know, I mean, we grew up in Alaska. It just wasn't, you know, it wasn't part of.
I can't conceive of any situation in where I would use that word.
Yeah, yeah. It would. I don't even feel comfortable singing along to songs with it in there.
No, me too.
In fact, listening to Dexter read Breakfast at Tiffany's, there was some use of the N-word in there that I was like, ooh, that stings. That's not good. Should take that out of there. You know, talking about like the R-word, like you cannot say the word retarded now, just in casual conversation. And you can't call something retarded, which I get, you know, I mean, I really do get, you know, if my child was developmentally disabled, I think it would be highly offensive. But
yeah,
because I grew up, you know, I was born 45 years ago, it's a word that will probably still creep into my lexicon now and then.
Here's the thing, though, as a medical provider, that's the medical term, though.
Oh, no, I know.
So in a clinical setting, I have to use that word.
Well, and I'm enough of a jerk that I will just say, oh, this new policy is developmentally disabled.
Well, that's fair, but yeah.
Well, no, it's not, because I'm still making fun of the developmentally disabled, as a matter of fact.
I subscribe to the Dan Savage, you know, leotarded is what he has said. You know, I realize that retarded is offensive, so I say leotarded, and that's what I mean.
Yeah, well, there
it
you
be
go.
Leotarded.
If you can use any number of words to describe people of different races, and it doesn't matter. Again, here's another joke of, I can't remember the comedian who said it, so now it feels like plagiarism. But you know, if like of all the words, like Chinaman, seems like the most innocuous. In fact, if you called Chinese people any name of any Chinese restaurant in your hometown, it would be more offensive. you know, I'm not gonna do his act, but it's very funny,
right?
When he starts talking about how, oh no, another family of those golden pandas moved in.
Oh dear.
Yeah, that kind of thing. It's very funny when done properly. So, but I am neither a professional comedian nor did I write that joke. So I'm not going to continue down that path. So, anything else on our list?
I just finished the Rachel Dratch biography audiobook read by her, which is pretty good. It was better than I thought it would be. It was funny in parts. It wasn't entirely a funny book, but it was interesting. So it kind of gives some insight as to her and her life in Saturday Night Live and that whole 30 Rock and all of that. So it's kind of interesting.
Did you buy Breakfast at Tiffany's?
I didn't. I missed it.
You know what? I think it's available now again for the same price.
I'll go look.
Because right now there's a sale where 100 books, it's like the anniversary of the Daily Deal. And so they have 100 books that are offered again for the same Daily Deal rate.
I'll have to go look.
Yeah, you can spend a lot of money on that sale.
I can't. I just finished. Yeah, no, I'm bad with audiobooks, man. I'm an addict.
Oh no, but let me tell you though, Breakfast at Tiffany's is totally worth it. It's relatively short, so I got through it pretty easily, and it made me do two things. It made me want to watch the movie and talk about it on the podcast at some point, and it also made me buy 5 a.m. Fifth Avenue, which is a book about the making of Breakfast at Tiffany's, the movie, and Truman Capote and Audrey Hepburn and Blake Edwards is the director.
Huh.
Yeah. About how, like, for instance, Truman Capote hated the idea of Audrey Hepburn being Holly Golightly. He thought Holly Golightly should be Marilyn Monroe 100%.
Wow. How did that not happen then? Because he really dug his heels in. I can't imagine that he'd let that go easily.
Well, you have to. Have you seen Breakfast at Tiffany's?
No.
Yeah, the one thing about Audrey Hepburn is she is, and I guess I'm not a huge Marilyn Monroe fan. I'm not, you know, just not in my wheelhouse necessarily. And I wouldn't be traditionally an Audrey Hepburn fan, except that she has had such a captivating presence.
Oh yeah,
she's just amazing to watch. She's just delightful.
She radiates.
She does, yeah. So you could totally see why they picked her to do it. And of course, they changed it from the story itself because the story itself, as it turns out, is not exactly what I expected. It's fun though, but it's a novella. Like I said, it's short. I think it's like 5 hours long or something. So if it's on sale for a good price, get it. And the fact that Michael C. Hall narrates it is even better.
Yeah, that's what I would look forward to that.
Yeah.
So that was the Rachel Dratch I finished. Now I'm listening to the Jim Gaffigan Dad is Fat, which is funny, actually. I think you should actually listen to it. And I need to recommend it for Drew because it's about him having children. And so I think both you and Drew will dig it because there's some pretty funny parts about being a dad.
He's such a funny guy.
And then I just finished, before the Rachel Dratch book, I was reading the audiobook, Metro 2033.
Oh, yeah. What did you think about that?
That was a really good story. It was really good. I had a hard time with the names of places because there's so many of them and they're very Russian. So it was hard for me to keep track of which was what place.
Now, is the video game based on the book or is the book based on the video game?
The video game is loosely based on the book.
Oh, okay, cool. Excellent. So,
I'm now playing the video game.
Oh, is it a fun experience playing the video game?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, cool. Okay. I'm trying to think. I don't have any news. I think Dr. Strangelove in a couple of weeks will be great. By that time, hopefully, I'll put out enough episodes to get back into the swing of things. We haven't missed a week, and we're still ahead of the game as far as weeks versus episodes. But I do have a lot to go back and edit. So,
yeah, no, and I'm going on vacation next week, so I will be in Newport, and so I would technically be available, but the timing will not be
ideal. Enjoy your vacation.
Take a week off. It's actually kind of a staycation because I'm just taking the week off and not really doing anything. So
you've earned it. At this point,
this will be my first like vacation where I haven't gone anywhere, where I haven't traveled more than 200 miles ever.
And will not have to lug a piece of machinery up a hill for somebody else.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So.
Oh, God. Memories.
Yes.
Oh, Sunset Boulevard. I did a callback from when you and Drew were talking about Sunset Boulevard.
Yes.
Fantastic movie. It is a fantastic, fantastic movie. It's also not a bad Andrew Lloyd Webber adaptation if you're into musicals. There's actually two versions of Andrew Lloyd Webber Sunset Boulevard available. One, which is the London recording, which is Patti LuPone, who's great. And then there's this odd American version who the lead is played by Glenn Close.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, and I own both of them. So if you'd like to borrow them.
Yeah, we can make that happen. We should talk about Sunset Boulevard at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a great, if you haven't seen it, it really, Drew's right. It's iconic and people steal a lot of things from that movie. And it is a wonderful movie. And it is a, you know, it's one of those classic Hollywood morality tales.
Yeah. Well, I have not seen it, but I intend to dive in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Okay. So are we then ending this episode?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay, cool. Well, have a great vacation.
Yeah.
And we'll come back with Dr. Strangelove. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.